The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks a green dog blitz is when a new dog shows up at the park. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, the host of the Dominique Foxworth Show. You can find him all over ESPN. Debatable. Get up. First take. Did I get everything? Dominique Foxworth.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. What's up, buddy? Good to see you. How you
feeling?
It's
good to see you, too. I'm feeling good. Did you enjoy Monday's game between the Niners and the Rams?
I did. I mean, it feels like another one of those kind of throwbacky games where it's defense and running the ball. I enjoyed the game. Debo is incredible. The Rams are really concerning, and I think I was one of the people who was kind of defensive of Cooper Kupp over the offseason, whereas people generally, and maybe this is just a small circle of football fans and analysts.
People are criticizing Cooper Kupp? Who are these people?
Well, I think it's like comparing Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp had the Triple Crown last year. So, like, in my view, I was like, all right, he's like the best receiver in football. Yeah. And there are people who are like, he's not in the top five. And last night, I mean, as far as like talented receivers, if you're drafting right now, is Cooper Kupp one of the first five receivers you would draft? And my answer over the summer was yes. And partly last night's game is like an argument for why he's not, because his effectiveness is moving the chains, and he doesn't scare defenses. And that's when you have a bad offensive line, when you're weak on the offensive line, it allows teams to blitz and play more aggressively than they normally would have if they're not afraid of Allen Robinson or Cooper Kupp, like, breaking their defense.
Well, I think they're afraid of Cooper Kupp. I mean, it looked like he was doubled or bracketed on.
Yeah.
I mean, he is their whole offense right now, right? Like, he is.
I would push back on that. It didn't feel like he was doubled very often. And when they did double him, they bracketed him because they're afraid of him doing an option route and getting a first down. It's very different. You don't bracket a receiver that can run past you. So that's a whole nother ball of wax.
I hear what you're saying. No, there's an explosiveness maybe that's not as threatening as like a, you know, I don't know, Jamar Chase or a Justin Jefferson or, well, we'll talk about Debo Samuel in a second. Yeah, I think this was a good example of, like, you can't build the whole plane out of Cooper Kupp, because even if he is getting you, you know, 7-8 yards at a time or whatever, if you can't do anything else, that's just it, the offense is just so tight. And, you know, moving forward, like, we will talk about the Niners defense momentarily and how whether or not they're the best in the league. That was my first winner, by the way, when we started the podcast on week one, was the Niners defense. And they certainly lived up to that. But I am, I'll start here. I am legitimately concerned about this Rams offense, because if you can't run the ball and you can't pass protect, you can't do much, Dominique. I think with Matt Stafford, those interceptions have always been there, but he's streaky about it, right? And it feels like, okay, well, if all these other things are going wrong and Matt Stafford is pressing, as he clearly was in this game, that's when bad things start to happen with him.
Right. And the answer to a team that's really aggressively blitzing you is screens is one of the answers. If the screen goes for 6, what the hell can you do? And it feels like there's so many things wrong. And part of this is you make trade-offs. And one of the trade-offs from the F them picks philosophy is you have less room for error. You have to make all your offseason acquisitions have to work, you know, and Allen Robinson hasn't worked. And they're in a situation now where, like, if you look at the last several years as a collection of years, then you're like, all right, we got a Super Bowl out of it. It was worth it. But now you got to pay for that Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think you're right. Last night I thought was a really good exhibition for, they're a little bit worse in a lot of places. Whether it's, you know, I mean, you can really go across the roster. You lose not just Andrew Whitworth, but the interior of the offensive line. Guys have moved on. You draft Logan Bruss this year in the second round. He immediately gets hurt in the preseason. And so that's a problem. You know, wide receiver wise, you mentioned they signed Allen Robinson, who's been pretty ineffective for them thus far. Tutu Atwell was a second round draft pick. He was a healthy scratch. You know, so that's an issue. Von Miller on the other side, they're not getting any pass rush outside of Aaron Dahl. That was actually really striking to me, how little of a pass rush they got outside of Aaron Dahl. I mean, Leonard Floyd, I don't think he has a sack so far this season. And when you play next to Aaron Donald, you should have some sacks through the first four games of the season because the opportunities are there. And, you know, they were moving Aaron Donald around trying to take advantage of matchups on that Niners, you know, injured offensive line at left tackle. They shouldn't have to move him. I mean, you know, it's good to have that in your arsenal, but because of the double teams he commands, everyone else gets one-on-ones. You should be able to get something going. And then, you know, in the secondary, again, players have moved on. Darius Williams now in Jacksonville. All of a sudden, although I do actually think the young corners look pretty good, but all of a sudden, just across the board, you're like, oh God, like, you're, like you said, the margin for error is so small that if you're not improving at a number of positions or you're a little bit worse, suddenly it adds up to a worse team.
Yeah, the pressure is a concern, obviously, but I don't know. I mean, I guess in last night's game, it didn't feel like the pressure was, or the lack of pressure was because of lack of personnel, which is probably part of it, but it also felt like they were never in advantageous positions because they also couldn't really stop the run.
Yeah.
And the 49ers didn't seem to want to do, like, aggressive drop-back passing, which, like, we understand why they wouldn't want to do that. And they didn't. So if the Rams can get a lead and force the opponents and also stop the run, that allows, I think, the D-line to be more effective. So, like, all that stuff is interconnected. Yes, we can be critical of the pass rush that they had, but it's also, like, I'm trying to think back and my memory could be a little hazy, but I remember very few times that Jimmy Garoppolo just did straight drop back. I remember several times where they gashed him for effective runs.
Yeah, and it felt like they really had their number, too, in terms of the pass rush. Like, had answers for the blitz, and every time that the Rams' defensive line was over-aggressive in their pursuit of either the run or the pass, Shanahan seemed to just have the counterpunch, whether it's that wham block or whether it's, you know, going to Debo Samuel when you get Aaron Donald coming off the left side. It just felt like they were a step ahead the entire game on that side of the ball. Whereas on the other side, D'Amico Ryans went nuts in this game with the blitz, which, you know, the Troy Aikman and Joe Buck commented on this a lot because it's shocking. The Niners typically don't blitz. They're the third least blitzing team in the NFL coming into this game. They blitzed Matthew Stafford on, I believe, nearly 50% of dropbacks. And it felt like, I mean, you talked a little bit about the screens. It just felt like the Rams, for so much of the game, didn't have a counter for that, especially in key moments in the red zone, which is really, you know, there were times where they could actually put together a few ball drives and kind of get there. But once they got into the red zone, they just really didn't have an answer for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking back to that one pass that Matthew Stafford just threw well behind. I think it might have been Higbee that should have been intercepted and it was dropped. The night could have been even worse. But yeah, they didn't seem to have it. Red zone efficiency, like, as you know, is often, like, a little bit cyclical and random, but it felt last night, with the exception of that one pass, that they just got down there, and I guess it just speaks to the whole game is, like, they don't have much.
Yeah.
They got one punch, and it's a jab. Like, no disrespect to Cooper Kupp, but his punch is a jab, and they don't have any knockouts.
It's, yes, it feels like McVay is having to work so hard for every down. I think that's it, right? First of all, we know scheming around a bad offensive line, you have to, like, cut your playbook in half at just as a starting point, and the inside of the offensive line is bad now. And then the fact that you can't run the ball, really, I would say both inside and outside, is an issue for a couple of reasons. I think some of that's on the blocking. I also think, you know, Cam Akers just doesn't have the juice right now. Honestly, still coming back off of that injury, of course. But then it's like, okay, well, you know, he's using Skowronek as a fullback, and sometimes that works, but sometimes he's going to, you know, like, go one-on-one with, was it Nick Bosa he blew by? Or like you bring in Allen Robinson because he's supposed to help you in the red zone. By the way, they weren't good in the red zone last year either. It was like one area where the Rams were weak. You get him there, you line him up, you throw him the fade. He ain't coming down with the football. He's got drops there. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, what else can you do here? Because you're running out of, like you said, like almost like weapons.
That Skowronek thing is really depressing when you are playing against the 49ers in particular.
Yeah.
Because they're like, we got a wide receiver that can do a lot of things. He's not going to have any catches and he's going to play fullback. And then you look over, like, we have a wide receiver named Debo that actually can do a lot of things.
So, yeah,
like, a lot of useful things.
Oh, my God. Let's talk about Debo for a second. Do you think he is the most dangerous player in the NFL with the ball in his hands outside of Lamar?
I mean, Tyreek Hill also. I mean, I wouldn't argue with anyone who said that Debo was that guy. But, I mean, I think there's a couple guys that are up there. But, yeah, Debo, it's different than Tyreek Hill. Debo is, I was going to say like a running back, but he is a running back at times who gets out there. And, like, he ran through Jalen Ramsey's tackle. Like, Jalen Ramsey's not a small guy. He's not afraid to tackle. He's not a corner who's not physical. And Debo just ran through it like you would expect a running back to do. It's something special. And then he pulls away from people. He is special, and Shanahan uses him in all the ways that he can be used.
It's that combination of the strength and acceleration that is just so unmatched. I mean, shoot, sometimes with the bonds, he looks like Derrick Henry, like at the end of games, just untackleable, but then sort of like gaining power as the game goes on. He seems to get, I swear to God, he looks so big on the field to me sometimes too. I think it's just contrary to the expectations of like a wide receiver moving that way in space, but like it looks like, you know, and I don't know what broadcast they do where they'll like make the guys bigger. They like, you know.
Oh, that's Fox, right? Where they do
Fox
the...
does that. Yeah, it feels someone made him a little bit bigger on every play.
Yeah,
like just
I got you. I thought you were talking about, because Fox does those like those
like cartoons that are like
graphics, but you're not talking about that. You're talking about like when they zoom in on a player.
The Fox ones are demented, where they give everybody like an insane 8-pack and like just make everyone like weirdly sexualized and jacked. You remember the Ben Roethlisberger one from before he retired? Have I ever shown this to you? God. It's incredible. I think, yes, obviously, my big take, I mean, we know Debo is amazing. My big takeaway from this game, offensively, I thought the Niners' offensive line looked a lot better than I expected. Part of the reason why I picked the Rams in this one and the Niners' Twitter dunked on us, we, at NFL Live, we did a unanimous Rams pick, and it was, we tried to never do that because for this team socials just like are constantly. It's funny because I don't think like I believe the picks across like the country were pretty split on this game. It was a very close line. I saw the pregame show. So you just know these team socials are just waiting. They're looking for anywhere. Can we find the unanimous pick? Can we find, I mean, we gave them a really, you know, a nice tasty one served up, but I swear to God, they'll look for like, you know, like a social media show. They'll do whatever it takes to find like bulletin board material for these tweets. But you know, credit where credit's due. So, but what surprised me, like I said, the reason I picked them was I thought the Trent Williams injury would be bigger. And in recent weeks, I've expressed some concerns about this Niners offensive line, but I thought they played really well. I thought, I mean, granted, Jimmy Garoppolo throws the ball pretty quickly, but I thought they did a great job of game planning for Aaron Donald. You know, running away from him, moving the pocket away from him. And yeah, I was really impressed with how they looked up front.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Trent Williams injury was going to be bigger. I mean, I guess we still have season to go to see how they hold up when they are down and they do have to drop back. But I mean, it's also running the ball. Having Trent Williams out there, who's quite possibly the most athletic man at that size, they're going to miss him. And they haven't missed him yet, but we'll see what happens going forward. Or they didn't miss him in this game, at least. We'll see what happens going forward. But I don't know. We had this conversation on Get Up earlier today about them being the rematch for the NFC Championship. And are either of these teams Super Bowl contenders now? And I am... What? You're laughing because I'm forcing these... dumb topics on
I
mean,
I did the same thing this morning. Like,
Yeah, I mean, it was a good question, I guess, because it was hard to answer because, like, the 49ers...
They're the same.
They they don't really feel like it, but they never really feel like it, and somehow they always end up in contention. And the Rams, definitely not to me right now with the Rams.
Mm. Okay. The Niners. The same team, basically. Same offense. Yeah. You could argue that the defense is going to be better this year with Charvarius Ward, and then Talanoa Hufanga has been incredible for them at safety. So, you know, improvements in the back end, the pass rush is, of course, as good as ever, whether they're just sending for blitzing. I guess maybe the case for them being a Super Bowl contender, despite, again, largely being the same, to me rests on a couple of things. One, right now, offense is down. There's like a bigger conversation about that and whatever, but it feels like this is a year where the best defense in the NFL, and I kind of think they are the best defense in the NFL, coupled with a game manager quarterback, provided he doesn't make any backbreaking errors, which of course, gigantic caveat, feels like a year where they could win. And the other thing is, I think when I look across the NFC, if this is about just getting to the Super Bowl, yeah, I could see it. I think I look at the main competitors. You've got the Bucs and the Packers, both of whom have weaknesses on the offensive line and quarterbacks who struggle under pressure. Well, that happens to be where the Niners are fantastic. And then the Eagles. And I think that, I would obviously put the Eagles a cut above them, but they're a pretty similar football team in certain ways. I think that they match up better with them than perhaps most teams in the NFL. So it does not seem outside the realm of possibility to me that this team could get back to the Super Bowl.
Right. Yeah, I think I landed on the same thing. The Eagles seem to be a bit cut above, in part because of their depth. Is everyone's going to have injuries. They're more built to survive them because they're so deep, and they have guys that they can rely on, like two at all the important positions, from receiver to offensive tackle to cornerback. They have guys that they can trust there, and that is something the reason why, and I guess the strike against the Eagles is the quarterback, even though he's been great this year, it's like they played not so great opponents, I guess. Maybe he doesn't have that highest level, even though he's shown it so far in the regular season. But that strike doesn't hold up that well if you're looking at the 49ers.
Yeah.
Because they also have a quarterback who has huge question marks and, frankly, is probably less talented than Jalen Hurts. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Give me the Eagles. Maybe the 49ers can make a run.
I guess my last question about this game coming off of it is, like, are the Rams fixable? Is there, like, I think because, yeah, it's tricky, man. Because this, like, we talked about, McVay's not playing with a full deck here. The offense. Right. I think the defense can get things, you know, and play better than they did yesterday. They weren't terrible by any means. But offensively, it feels like they don't really have there were players who were hurt on that offensive line and will get back, but they're still it's not the group that it was in recent years, even at full strength. And then in terms of like the weapons, at some point I guess they can get OBJ in the mix, which certainly is a game changer for them on offense, just because of, well, there's a million reasons why, but you know, having Cooper Kupp not be first, second, and third option on every play, having defenses having to account for another wide receiver would certainly help. I thought one thing I noticed in this game was they used a teeny bit of 12 personnel to try to help out the offensive line, and actually on those plays were pretty successful. So their number two tight end right now is suspended, Bryson Hopkins. This is, I'm really reaching, man. I'm like, their backup tight end might come in and save this, but they just need bodies, honestly, to try to make life a little bit harder for defenses.
We don't know that Odell will come back and be himself at least immediately. Second string tight ends are not tilting the balance. So like it feels very unlikely. So they can clip this for their social later when they go on a Super Bowl run in front of us. But I don't actually see this happening.
It doesn't work unless there's a graphic. Can you guys make a graphic to put on Dominique that says Dominique doesn't believe in the Rams, their season is over. It's for the Rams social media.
I'm fine with it.
One last thing I do want to bring up. Kyle Shanahan. I love him. Dominique, how much do I love Kyle Shanahan?
So much.
Please give me a little
1 to 10, 9.6.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think I love it. Lenny's like a 9.7, so that's fair. I think he's brilliant. I think he's incredible play caller. Last night, I thought he masterclass. However, you got to go for it on fourth down when you're there. I mean, come on. I mean, I know this is who he is. You had the chance to put the game away, and obviously the defense was locked in and it didn't matter, but that's not always going to be the case. And you have to prepare for the possibility that Jimmy Garoppolo might throw an interception later on. And when you got the chance to get the points with him, you take him. You take them, especially. It drives. I don't know. Like, what's it going to take?
He's always been like that. It's not going to take anything. He's not going to change. It's his. I don't know. It's who he is. I don't know what to tell you. Like, he's his father's son. He's still there with his thinking, I guess. And you get the good with the bad with Kyle.
It's like, I don't know. It's like someone who's like the most beautiful person in the world, but like only thinks that they can be with, I don't know. Here's what it's a tortured analogy. But my point is, the thing that's frustrating for it, because, you know, there's a lot of coaches around the league who don't go for it on fourth down or whatever, and we criticize them in certain situations. You're so good at calling plays! So it's like, he doesn't have faith in the thing that he is arguably the best in the NFL at. And also, by the way, your team is literally built to do this.
He's old school. Like, he wants to run the ball more than he wants to pass the ball. Like, you have to take the good with the bad with someone like that. It's like, I don't want to go on the dating analogy, but you get the point.
We need a better one. You have to.
It's like, okay, here's a better analogy. It's like a job. It's like there are certain jobs that you have to get up really early to do. So, like, if you're a trash man, you got to get up really early to do that job. The good part about that is you get your whole afternoon to yourself. The bad part is you got to get up really early. You can't have the good without the bad. And Kyle Shanahan, yeah, that's even worse analogy.
No.
But you get the point. Okay, here we go.
Okay. Kyle Shanahan not going for it on fourth down because he's such a brilliant offensive play caller with such, you know, weapons who are optimized for the situation. He's like a master chef in a kitchen that is stocked with the best ingredients on earth. Okay, and for your appetizer, he makes you like a beautiful like sashimi dish with like caviar. It's incredible. Mm. For the entree, you get like a, I don't know why I'm going in a Japanese direction here, I was gonna say like a Japanese wagyu steak. I don't know. It's like an incredible, maybe like a little like I love trout. Maybe like a nice like smoked trout, you know, with smoked. I don't know why I already smoked. Anyways, another incredible dish, and you're like, oh my god, this guy, everything he's cooking is out of this world. I'm like losing mine. Then all of a sudden, it's time for dessert, and he puts a single Nilla wafer on your plate and walks away.
He grew up on Nilla wafers. He loves them. He grew up on them. It's a perfect analogy. You're right. That's what he grew up on. He grew up on kicking field goals when you can.
All right. Let's take a quick break and hand out some Nilla wafers.
Yummy.
The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesar Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesar Rewards. Must be 21 or older. I think I did it on the...
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do. Big, small, and when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
All right, we are back. So last week,
Let's be transparent about the winners and losers. Just tell them everything. Go right in. You want me to tell them or you want to tell them?
You tell them. You tell them.
No, I don't want to tell them. You tell them. It's your show. You tell them what happened.
Okay. If it says winners and woofs, I'm going to try to make this happen, Dominic.
You're trying to be, I'm sorry. I'll commit to that. I'm committed to winners and woofs. You tell them what happened with the winners and woofs.
So we sent an email for the show just so goes. And I think I write in my email, Eugene Cyril Smith, Gina Smith.
Yes.
And it was my winner, and Kenny Pickett is my woof. Dominic writes back with his winner and woof. Tell them what you said.
I said Peter
Clay.
Peter Clay Carroll and Pickett was my woof.
Basically,
the whole point of this is it's supposed to give us an opportunity to talk about four new subjects, and I just stole Mina's because I didn't read her email. I also did the middle name thing without for the same reason. I did the middle name thing, and then you responded like, I'll just pick two new ones. And I was like, pick two new ones. And then I looked, they were like, oh.
I tried to do the thing where I tried to be nice and shame you at the same time.
It worked. It was a nice shame.
All right. It's actually for the best that you're going to go with the Seahawks as a winner and not me. So let's start there. The floor is yours. We're going to go winner, woof, because...
To be fair, my winner was slightly different.
It was slightly different.
I went with Pete Carroll because I feel like Pete Carroll, This is the Belichick Brady thing playing out in the other direction.
Ooh.
It's like, and I imagine that Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick, they got to be the two oldest coaches in football right now.
Yes.
They probably, call each other on the telegraph and talk about how Russell should have never left and Tom Brady should have never left. But like, I think that the Pete Carroll victory lap hasn't started, but he's revving up his engine because it sure seems like Russell can't get right. And Pete Carroll is like succeeding with Geno. Geno's putting up big numbers and they're winning. He's doing everything that Russell would have wanted to do if he had stayed there.
I think that you're right on a lot of counts. I think from the narrative standpoint, and it is how literally everybody was just comparing Geno Smith and Russell Wilson's numbers right now, and we all know what happened. Well, I don't actually think everybody knows what happened with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson and all of that. People have a general idea of it. He is a winner. However, I don't think you can field the defense that the Seahawks have this season, and if you're Pete Carroll, who's a defensive coach, do any victory laps just yet. In a holistic fashion, but it has got to feel good. And I think what's probably got to feel really good is a lot of people, including perhaps your girl, blamed the Seahawks almost entirely. When the Seahawks offense struggle, I would find myself, it's the offensive line, it's the play calling, it's the running the ball, it's whatever. Not Russell Wilson. And I think you're now kind of isolating the variable a little bit. Now, it's a little bit unfair because there's many different points in Russell Wilson's career where he played different styles of football. So I don't think it's fair to... But over the last 2 years, I think we're seeing the same Wilson that we saw the last 2 years in Seattle, now in Denver, which makes sense. That's how time works. Whereas Geno Smith, in pretty similar circumstances, is executing this offense to perfection.
Yeah, which is, and victory lap might be the wrong word, but gloat fest. I don't think it matters that his defense is bad. None of that matters. What matters is he had a much cheaper quarterback producing the same way that Russell is. And that's what it comes down to, because if the rift was between Pete Carroll and Russell, and most of the fans or the kids in this place, in this case, were on Russell's side, it has to feel really good. And when Russell left, there was less, like, even from you, like, it didn't seem like Seahawks fans were, like, upset or concerned as much as they should have been. And that could have changed. And I thought it was likely to change through the course of this year, when I thought Russell and the Broncos were going to be good and the Seahawks were going to be garbage. And it's not. It's gone the other way. The Seahawks are better than the Broncos right now.
The Seahawks offense was just really unpleasant to watch the last 2 years. Yeah. It looked very similar to what I was seeing from Denver, which is every now and then there'd be like an incredible magical drive and a gorgeous deep ball, but there'd be so many three and outs, so many sacks, not taking what was available underneath. So I think there's just something very like aesthetically pleasing about watching Geno Smith like just methodically run the Shane Waldron offense. And I think that's, by the way, you know, why this is working so well. He is a perfect fit for what Waldron wants to do on offense, which, you know, Shane Waldron was with the Rams as their pass game coordinator. And, you know, there's a lot of genes similar between them and what you're seeing in Seattle, the use of the tight ends, the under center play action. It just works. I think what's been remarkable about Geno, just to pivot this from, you know, like the who's winning the breakup kind of talk for a little bit, is last year, so I expressed some skepticism about, first of all, I thought he should win the job over Drew Lock, and clearly that's been the case. I did, however, express some skepticism because last year you saw he struggled under pressure. He has been dynamite against the blitz this year. I mean, you saw that against a very aggressive Detroit defense. He just sees the field really well. He has all of the correct answers. There was a play, I kind of joked about this, but when he audibled to, I don't know if you noticed, you saw this, it was a 36-yard run on like third and 16. Right, yeah. That's all Geno, man. Like, that is him being a very experienced and intelligent NFL quarterback. And I don't know how this season's going to go. He's only making $1.2 million, by the way. But I really hope, even if there are some downs, and there will be downs against harder defenses, he gets credit for what he's accomplished this year.
And by credit, you mean money.
Money. Yes.
I don't know where I heard this. It was a long time ago, but it stuck with me, is how restraints in certain cases or restrictions are like really good for creativity, and like how difficult it is to give someone a blank page and say, make magic. I think we talked about this a little bit when it applied to Russell Wilson, and how when you hand somebody the keys and, like, do whatever you want, it may not be the best for them. And not necessarily because they make the bad decisions, but sometimes when you are put in a situation where you have to work around certain parameters, you can perform better. And I think that's partially what's happening with Geno Smith, is they're like, all right, these are your areas to play. This is what we want to accomplish here, here, and here. And then these are your areas where you can do your own thing. I think, like, Russell would benefit from that, and Geno is certainly benefiting from that. And it's like Tom Brady, I don't know how things work in Tampa. I think the presumption is that Tom Brady just came down there and told Byron Leftwich exactly what he wants to do, and they're doing it that way. I do know that when Peyton went to Denver, that's how it happened. But when Peyton was in Indianapolis, Peyton had like pretty much complete autonomy. But that ain't for everybody, and it seems like it's not for Russell right now.
You know what? Felt what you're just describing was something that was really in my mind watching the Chiefs against the Bucs, actually. Mm-hmm. Just watching like Patrick Mahomes, like that offense for the most part, they are like running the ball well, the screen game looked really good, and then every, you know, other drive Patrick Mahomes would do something batshit crazy, and that's the sweet spot, right? Like, you don't want to build the whole plane out of crazy. You want Patrick Mahomes to elevate the offense in certain moments. But that's always the thing with the Chiefs, right? Is like, you don't, I actually thought when they beat the Chargers, that was too much just like, oh, Patrick, make a crazy play. Oh, but we're going to have some three and outs and we're not going to be able to like run the ball well. Like, it's nice when it's kind of like the frosting and not the whole cake. Sorry, I haven't eaten lunch yet.
I'm hungry too.
Keep going with these metaphors. Anyways.
And I think that partially, like, ruin some quarterbacks that think that they can be frosting all the time, but you can't. It's not a good idea. I was looking at some Chiefs numbers. I know this isn't what we're talking about, but I looked at how well they're running the ball against blocking disadvantages, and they are really, really good at it and committed to it, which, like, surprised me. I was trying to figure out, like, how this offense could be so good without Tyreek Hill, and I think that's the answer, is that Bieniemy and Reed are like, you know what? The offensive line is really good.
They were bullying the Bucs. I mean, the other thing, though, is you know, the offensive line has been good. What struck me, I know we're, like, suddenly pivoting to talk about the Chiefs, so we're not going to stay here, but that's the best I thought their backs have looked in terms of actually trusting their blocks. Clyde Edwards-Helaire looking decisive, because sometimes he kind of, I would say he's like always like, he can be like a tick slow, but he plays behind a dominant run blocking group. So it should be one of the most efficient rushing attacks in the NFL. Obviously, they get a ton of light boxes as well. So anyways.
And they were overexpected too. The rush running backs are,
Both him and Pacheco. All right. I lied. Last week I said we were going to go winner, woof, woof, winner, but I actually, just the way things shook out because of some back and forth about the winners and woofs that we don't have to go into and some of the complications created by the pre-show planning, I'm going to go with winner, my winner. I'll keep this quick. I was really impressed by the Bills defense and Leslie Frazier against Baltimore. We know that the Bills defense is good, shocker, right? But they're very banged up. Obviously, they don't have Micah Hyde anymore. And what impressed me was some of the adjustments they made at halftime. So I think that, I mean, there's no blueprint for playing Lamar, but I thought this is about as good as it gets in terms of the right approach, which is, you know, mostly in nickel. You keep, we've seen this before with Lamar. You want to have those lighter, faster bodies on the field, basically, which is seems counterintuitive to how heavy the Ravens are and the fact that they can pound the rock. But it is, if you have, you know, some stout defensive linemen, it's something that you can pull off. And then also in the Dominique in the second half, they made a few changes. I talked about the Niners defense and how they don't blitz. The Bills defense is the least blitzing defense, I think, more less so than the Niners. But in the second half, Frazier cranked it up from about 10% to over 20%. And it felt like every blitz was just like perfectly timed. And the Ravens were totally unprepared for it. So that was impressive. I thought the two linebackers, Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, were outstanding in this game, and they're going to need to be with the safety injury. And then finally, you know, the Bills defense is, it's not very complicated, but I did notice they were using more disguise in the second half, spinning in and out of their typical cover two shell. And I thought that gave Lamar troubles as well. So I just wanted to give quick snaps to the Bills defense and Leslie Frazier.
Oh, quick snaps. Yeah. I'm with you on the quick snaps to the Bills defense. They shut him out in the second half.
TLDR.
It was raining, so that was like a limiting factor also. But Josh Allen led the game-winning drive. We're going to talk about Josh Allen in that game, and Josh Allen was the best running quarterback in that game. He ran the ball very effectively on important downs, which I don't think I would have ever thought that I would see a game that Lamar Jackson was in and the opposing quarterback ran the ball better than him. So that's all important. But like the second half, to completely, the Ravens defense didn't come up big, obviously, when they needed to, but to completely shut the Ravens out in the second half, and I know they could have scored if they kicked that field goal, they didn't go for it, which I don't think you and I have to have that debate. I think we're both on the same side of this one. But it's really impressive for them. Like, the results, and for you to break down why the results were what they were, is impressive. We'll see what happens going forward, because no one has the single right answer for Lamar. But that was the right answer for that time.
I have one little mini rant on the fourth down thing. Why is going for it always, I think you have maybe said this to me too, so I might be cribbing from our own conversations. It's always going for it, or just aggression generally, is always what the nerds want and the old school football. Can't it be the reverse? Like, why can't, why can't aggression offensively in decision making, setting aside the fact that it's supported by the numbers? Oh, terrifying. Why can't that be what players, like, and offensive players do want it. Like, why do we always have to couch it as this weird binary, like, jocks nerds thing? Because it, like, there are jocks on the other side who want to be aggressive.
Because it was introduced to us by the nerds. Like, it was something, there was a way of doing it. And then we started doing it differently, and people were pointing to spreadsheets and saying, this is why we do it differently. And so it became, like, associated with them. Like, I agree with you. And as a defensive player, I would like them to go for it. And I'm not on the field anymore, but I feel like a lot of defenders are like, take the points, take the points.
Yeah.
Whereas I am like, no, put it out of reach or make my job even easier. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's because especially in that game when it's hard for me to listen to people say, take the points, trust your defense.
Against
then
Josh
we watch
Allen.
The defense give up Super an 80-yard drive.
And then they could have also made it. It wasn't like they...
Like, there was a penalty in there that was iffy, the roughing the passer. They might have stopped him there. But in general...
That was really
stupid.
Yeah. I had to, so Marcus Peters got into it with Harbaugh, and people were like, see, a defensive player was angry. And I'm like, guys, I know Marcus Peters has been out for a year, but can I remind you of his history on the sidelines in both college and the NFL? It's a little bit an unusual situation for him. All right.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your woof, and then my woof. The reason I'm structured this way is because my woof's sad, and there's no way we could pivot from my woof to be like, so how about the Bills defense? So you go first.
All your woofs are, I mean, all the winners and all the woofs are yours. You get to claim them all this week. What am I doing now? The woof, Kenny Pickett. And it's not even so much his performance. I can defend him in his performance in that game. Like, it's fine. He got thrown in the middle. It's his future. I think, who was I talking to? I really love the Amtrak employees. I go up on a salad to New York from DC to New York and back every Monday and Wednesday. And I've gotten to know, a lot of the guys who work the train and the women who work the train. I love them. They're great people. They're my friends now. They got takes. And one of them's the Steeler fan. And he was like, Kenny Pickett, the Kenny Pickett era is starting. That game was ugly, but like our O-line can protect now. And I'm like, oh, brother, get them expectations low, my friend. Because this, and he was like, yeah, he wasn't ready. The last interception was a Hail Mary, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, yeah, but this ain't the answer. TJ Watt ain't there. The O-line is doing better protecting, but they still can't run the ball. And what you need for a young quarterback, I think, is a way to take the pressure off of them. Ways to take pressure off of them is dominating defense, good rushing attack. They don't have either right now. And Kenny Pickett ain't the guy that, I mean, we've been through this before. I generally don't believe that there is like a quarterback that you drop on a bad roster and he just makes it good. But if that guy exists, it ain't Kenny Pickett. So I feel the wolf is partially about his performance, but it's mostly about the beginning of the Kenny Pickett era is going to be some tough games with a team that is not built to receive him.
Yeah, I mean, like, so just to address his performance, you know, he did not, you know, obviously it was up and down. I thought that offense had a little bit more juice than it did with Trubisky. There was, you know, he seems to have a nice rapport and trust with George Pickens, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Had a couple good throws over the middle of the field, used his legs. The interceptions, they were tipped, but they were bad decisions, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. What matters is that the next, I'm not the first person to say this, here's the Steelers schedule. Bills, who we just talked about. Bucks, Dolphins, Eagles, bye. Saints, defense still, you know, good. And then you got Bengals, Colts, Falcons, Ravens, Panthers, Raiders, Ravens, Browns. This feels like the worst possible place to have started Kenny Pickett. And I think that's what's so puzzling to me about this. Because I was asked before the season, when should Kenny Pickett play? And I said, either play him now or wait until like halfway through the season when the schedule gets soft as hell. And they didn't play him now. And they literally waited for the exact moment. And it doesn't seem like it was premeditated necessarily. I mean, I don't know what's going on. They, you know, Tomlin said they put them in just because the offense lacked, like it wasn't, they needed a spark, I think was his words. But it literally could not be a worse moment to play him.
Some teams and organizations have earned our trust and deserve it. The Steelers are one of those teams and organizations. However, I don't get it. I don't get it why at halftime, like it would seem to me that you would want to give a quarterback the best possible chance to succeed, which would include a full week of practice with the ones, not a halftime. We need some juice. The best argument I can come up for the Steelers throwing him in there is the same argument I had when they traded for Minkah Fitzpatrick. I mean, the argument back then, or the reason why people were critical of that, is they were about to be bad and they had first round picks and they didn't have a quarterback. They traded those to bring in, or they traded the first round pick to bring in Minkah Fitzpatrick, a safety, which is a position that's like, it's not a pivotal position necessarily if you're trying to win a championship. And so, like, I could understand people saying, why are you doing that? Just go ahead and ride out this bad season, get a first round quarterback. But the argument I made for that was they have a culture of like winning, doing everything you can to win, doing everything you can to be competitive, and not planning or not playing for the future, allowing the future to be the future, but we are going to be the Steelers, and they have always been that. And I guess that is the argument, is like, we got into halftime and damn all of your like plans and whatever. We want to ease Kenny in. We want to prepare him right. We want to win today. The best chance for us to win is not with Mitchell Trubisky. They could have learned that before halftime, but when Mike Tomlin decided that that was the time, then that was the time. I don't really believe that argument, but that's the best thing I can do to try to make it make sense.
I will say, most of my argument is about the competition, because I do think there are pieces here for a good offense. The offensive line is playing better. The skill players are really good, and I think Kenny Pickett can be better than Mitchell Trubisky. It's just the timing. All right. We got about 10 minutes to solve concussions. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
So that's my final woof. I haven't talked about it on this show. And the woof for me is the NFL, the concussion protocol, our belief in it, our the fact that basically for years we've kind of stopped talking about it. And I think that's what struck me the most, Dominique, about everything that's happened over the last couple of weeks with Tua Tagovailoa. And then since then, I think a renewed focus on concussions throughout the league. Seeing Cameron Brate, Bucks tight end, come back into the game. Tony Dungy was critical of that decision, you know, said he was staggering, and the Bucks have said, well, he said he had a shoulder injury. And I think the thing that we all agree on now coming out of this is self-reporting doesn't work. I would recommend people go listen to Alex Smith was on ESPN Daily with Pablo Torre and talked about how he talked about how he had like basically deceived and easily passed tests to get away with it. And I don't know if I'm sure the tests have changed since then, but it doesn't work. And I think the question is what does work? And I don't think there's a simple answer for that. But for me, like the most important thing now is trying to think of a less crude way to say we got to be on their every time a player looks to be concussed and goes back into the game, there has to be Tua level scrutiny. I think that's the only thing that's going to work is, frankly, an abundance of caution. And that's not going to solve concussions of football. It's not gonna, this is, you know, it's part of the game. You talked about it. I thought you articulated it really well this morning. But as far as like the media and fans and everything that we can do, it's, we have to be less trusting than ever. And I think that's really where the complacency has kicked in, is we've all just been way too trusting for the last few years.
Yeah. The ESPN Daily episode was really good with Alex Smith. People should listen to it if you haven't already. Alex, did a very good job of articulating the motivation to get back out there, and also of how easy it is to beat the test, because it's not a break that you can x-ray. It's subjective, and you can probably come back to like some level of awareness more quickly, but it doesn't mean that your brain hasn't been impacted. So, and it doesn't mean that you aren't susceptible to like a second concussion syndrome. You can still answer all the questions as quickly as possible, and you can still pass all of the physical tests that they ask, and your brain still be in jeopardy, which is why if somebody shows those like wobbling or grab their head or something like that, yes, abundance of caution. But I think my point through all of this is the point of the concussion protocol is kind of to protect us, you know, because like
make us feel like there's at least something in place.
It's to protect us from confronting the fact that like
right.
football is really freaking cool, and it's so fun to watch and very fun to play, and none of us want to give that up. But we need to understand that it's also very dangerous, and we can't take it out. We can't take the risk out of the game. And when you play a football game, particularly if you're offensive lineman, defensive lineman, linebacker, running back, these type of positions, you have subconcussive episodes the entire game. And those things can lead, and you look at like the players who we learn about who like commit suicide and have the really bad CTE outcomes that are scary, like those are not quarterbacks or and oftentimes they're not people who take those big shots that we remember. Those are just guys who went in every day and had multiple subconcussive episodes through the course of their career. So like I obviously am aware of the research. I'm not going to pretend like I know more than like doctors and all that stuff, but I think that the doctors will tell you that this game cannot be made safe as it is currently constructed. So like I would never argue for the abolition of football, but what I think we should do is like not be all sanctimonious when we see this stuff and accept that we are also a part of this and do what we can to like be honest about it. And so, yeah, we don't want to see the big, ugly, gruesome hits. But everybody on that field at the end of that game shook hands and went back to their locker room. All those guys, like, theoretically got a little closer to CTE. and it's not just Tua. That's all.
I think what you said at the beginning kind of about concussion protocols for us, I think like that was something that struck me is like, oh, as soon as the Tua thing happened, it's like, okay, they're going to try to isolate the bad actor and say, hey, this happened, but it's not the normal thing and the protocol works. And actually I was wrong, because it does sound like there is acknowledgement, and we'll see what it actually leads to, that the protocol doesn't work, that it wasn't just a bad actor. We know, by the way, that, you know, multiple people are involved in making a decision for a player to go back on the fields. But your point is well taken. Like there has to be some degree of acceptance that this is not going to be legislated out of the sport. It can't be solved easily with a little tweak like, oh, we're going to have a better spotter and we're going to have a better test. It's not going to solve it. However, I also think we can accept those things and put pressure on the league to raise the bar, because the bar right now is clearly too low, and it's low for a number of reasons, one of which is like, you know, I said, like, I think we've just stopped paying attention to it altogether. Our friend Jay King had a column at the beginning of this year about after the death of Vincent Jackson and Philip Adams, former NFL cornerback, killing people, barely raised an eyebrow amongst people in the league. And I think and his conclusion, this column, was like, wow, we really stopped caring about concussions. And I think we can undo that. We can at least start putting pressure Like, if a player like Cameron Bait or Tua looks concussed, that should be enough. There should be an abundance of, and I'm not saying it solves the problem, and I'm not saying it, but I do think, like, at least the complacency can be addressed. And that starts, you know, I said this on NFL Live. When Tua came back on Monday, I didn't say about it. No, I was asked about it on SportsCenter. I said, well, they asked me, they said, well, it looks like, do you think he should have been in the game? And I was like, well, yeah. I mean, I saw him hit his head, but they said he passed the test, and I shouldn't have said that. Yeah. That was woefully insufficient.
And that's my point, is, like, we need to take responsibility. That's what I said this morning, is, like, McDaniel should take responsibility for his part in it. We need to take responsibility for our part in it. And by we, I mean analysts, and I mean fans, and all of us who were, like, repulsed by him being out there and repulsed by the fencing reaction, is, like, we need to keep that same intensity all the way through and apply it to as many things as we can apply it to. It's a hard thing to do. It's human nature. I understand it. It's, like, across society, any issues that we have, like, we just don't want to look at them. We don't actually want to address them. We just don't want to look at them, from George Floyd to anything else. So, like, I'm sorry it's going way off of topic, but it just feels like some part of human nature that we need to figure out how we can hold ourselves accountable and address it.
What bothered me, like, my media, I'm sure he seems like a good guy who cares about his players, and I don't think there's any, like, malicious intent, certainly.
Of course.
But one thing that really bothered me about the way he's talked about this is how definitive he's been. Just continually saying, I have complete faith that we did the right thing and I trust our doctors and what. Like, dude, if there's anything to take away from all of this, it's that you can't trust any of it, and we don't know what the hell a concussion looks like in the moment. Yeah, and I think all of us need to be less. I mean, the NFL wants us to be definitive, to feel like, okay, that's a concussion. This is not a concussion. They did it right. They did it wrong. But the reality is, this is messy as hell. Like, you know, we know that you can't diagnose them in the moment. So I think for him and, like, other people in and around the league, like, we all have to be a lot less definitive moving forward, because the only thing we've really learned from this is that we know a whole lot less than we think we did at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted some more, like, recognition and compassion from Mike McDaniel there. It's like, don't be so defensive. It feels to me like, I know people say this often, like, what would you do if it was your son? You don't even have to go that far. It's just like, what would you do if you didn't work for this organization? What would you say? Like, it seems obvious. It's like, and I try to imagine myself in that situation. It's like, I like to imagine that I would feel terrible. And I don't think that I would do anything different than Mike McDaniel. I'm not trying to say I'm a better person than him in any way. Like, if the doctors, which they did, told him he could play, I would have put my quarterback back in the game also. And I would have started him the following week if, like, during the week he passed all the tests. Like, that's not my job to, like, do concussions. But after what happened, I like to think that I wouldn't stand up and say, we did everything right. No. Yeah. So, like, something was done wrong, obviously, and you were a part of it, and you had the ability to not do that. And hopefully he learns from it going forward and whatever.
Now, hopefully other coaches do too. But, you know, I won't hold my breath. All right. That was a lot. Dominique.
Can we go eat now? I'm hungry.
I'm really hungry. I'll see you next week.
Bye.